Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, what do we want it to be? What do we want it to be? Welcome into the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. That's the question that I want to address, tackle, try to figure out with your help on the talk and text line, which is 651-461-9226. What do the University of Minnesota leadership, Mark Coyle, athletic director, what do they want the Gopher basketball program to be? What are reasonable expectations for what Gopher basketball should be? This fresh off of the news that the University of Minnesota have let go, have fired head coach Ben Johnson late last night, and will be searching for a new head coach. When you look at this and you try to figure out Gopher basketball, I wonder, number one, how they view this program. Mark Coyle, and this is my opinion about Gopher basketball. I do think that Gopher basketball, that's a good job. And I think it's a better job than what most maybe Minnesotans view within the Big Ten. I think that it's a good job, number one, because it is the Big Ten. And the two best conferences in the country are the Big Ten and the Big 12. And I guess you could say the SEC, because the SEC's really come on. But those are the big three. The fact that the recruiting base here, in terms of this being a basketball-rich with talent state, if you get the right person in there that can, I don't want to say close the borders, because I'm not sure that's ever going to happen. We've got kids that are so good, and they're just NBA talent, and head, they're going to go to the Dukes. They're going to go to the UConns. They're going to go to all these different places, but keep a few of them home. Top ones home. I think that you could go places. Is the barrier that the program is viewed as lackluster right now? Is the barrier the fact that Williams Arena is old? Is the barrier that they need a new facility? Is the excuse NIL? Is excuse, like, how do we evaluate and look at Gopher basketball? Because the first thing that I want to know from Mark Coyle is, do you think that this is a top tier, realistically, a top first half of the Big Ten Conference type of program? I believe that it is. But the way that they are operating in today's NCAA and college athletics, I don't think that they know. I don't think that there's any certainty. And we don't need Mark Coyle to be uncertain about what's going on. Now, I know that there are people that are in their feelings about the timing, like the late night stuff and all that. I'm not going to go overboard with that, and I'm going to tell you why. It does come across as odd, but I'm going to give somebody respect, because I think the respect that is owed to a coach is that you do something face-to-face and you don't, like, talk over the phone. Or you, like, I think that the proper thing to do is when you have made that decision, you meet up, and I don't care what time of day or night, you just face it man-to-man and you say, this is the decision that's made. So I'm not going to get, like, in my feelings about that. Now, with respect to Ben, and Ben's a friend, I'll acknowledge that. awesome individual. I think that even Ben, if he walked in here right now, would say, looking at his own track record, his own expectations, that he underachieved. Do I think it's all just on him? No, because he got some good kids in here. At the beginning, some of them moved on and went to the transfer portal, moved on to other situations. I think that he would just acknowledge openly that he was given a chance. Now, people can, if you're a Gopher fan, season ticket holder, whatever, you may have a different perspective about what was given a chance. But I don't think that anybody out there, I don't care if it's me, you, family members of Ben Johnson, anybody, boosters, 4 years, I think, is that's a good ramp up to be able to say that I got a chance. The same way that another friend of mine, Lindsey Whalen, Lindsey was given an opportunity. She was given years to it wasn't a 1 or 2 or 3 year. I mean, when you're given basically a 4 year shot, that's a decent amount of time.
Yeah, you know, we talk about sample size and sometimes individuals aren't given enough time. It's like, you know, the turnover's so quick. It used to be you don't really know what you've got because you're waiting until your class comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's wait till these freshmen come in. They get past their red shirt. They're sophomores. They're juniors. But now with NIL and the transfer portal, everything becomes a year-to-year.
It is year-to-year.
What is the free agency, right? Like, what are you able to get the here and now that's going to be able to help you? Because some of those kids don't also have that. It used to be, okay, you got the transfer, you have to sit out a year. Like, there are a lot of these regulations that have gone by the wayside with the transfer portal. So the whole, we have to wait until your class comes into their own, like, those days are gone. So, I mean, 4 years is a pretty good sample size, but I think you raise valid points. I do think that there's no excuse that the University of Minnesota cannot be a top-tier program when it comes to NIL. I'm not saying the facilities aren't an issue. There are other barriers that I think are there for the University of Minnesota. But when you've got a market the size of Minneapolis-St. Paul, a top 20 market in the entire nation, you've got Fortune 500 companies.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just have a really hard time believing that there's no reason that that NIL money can't become more of a factor in favor of the Gophers.
You know, one of the questions that Marcus Fuller from the Minnesota Star Tribune had asked of Mark Coyle was, did you consider bringing Johnson back another year to benefit from more money invested in the program? And he essentially, this was the answer. I'll read you the full answer. When you take a step back and take a look at the last 4 years and the body of work, I just felt we didn't have enough consistency at a high level. We would get some big wins, and then we would have some tough losses. So I'll finish it there, because he goes on and talks about Ben's a wonderful person, cares deeply about the program and all, and we know that. But he's citing a lack of consistency. And during the year, that was something that was noted, that, you know, you have a great West Coast trip, you defeat USC, you defeat UCLA, and then when you come back to the barn and you have a tough loss against teams that you should beat, like, you know, like a Penn State or whatever, that was going to rear its ugly head. And then getting bounced in the first game at the Big Ten tournament, that was something too.
You can't build any momentum if you only have two or three games at a time and the schedule becomes favorable and you stub your toe. It's kind of hard.
Yep.
It's kind of hard to look at it.
Yep. 651-461-9226. We'll take a break. We'll be joined by Andy Greeter, who covers the Gophers for the Pioneer Press, and we'll do that next year on The Lake Show. All right, we sent out the bat signal for Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press because of the breaking news from last night, and he joins us now courtesy of the John Schuster Coral Banker Hotline with regards to Ben Johnson being let go. Andy, always a pleasure, and I'm thankful to have you here on the show. I saw a tweet yesterday from you, and you said, context, in Big Ten Tournament press conference, Gophers men's basketball coach Ben Johnson sure sounded like he is fully expecting to return for the 2025-26 season. This was heard in way he talked about potential returning players to attacking the transfer portal in next few weeks. Clearly, all of that changed when it was announced after 1 a.m. that he was no longer the head coach. How surprised were you? Because I think that most people look today and they said, well, we're not necessarily surprised he was given 4 years and all of that good stuff, whatever. But, like, in terms of just the feel of it, did it surprise you from that perspective?
It did. You know, I think the biggest reason that I thought that he was going to get another year was probably financially. I think when you look at the fact that the Gophers have to spend approximately $20 million in revenue sharing to its players and how big of a financial hit that's going to be for an athletic department that is break even at this point. I thought that, you know, there was enough things to show that they were competitive, that they didn't want to pay a $3 million buyout and likely a buyout to get an existing coach to replace him. I thought those two factors kind of alone, and the fact that preseason wise, they were picked to finish 18th and went 12th, and the fact that they have low NIL money and the roster was decimated last year, I think that was, you know, kind of looked at more, could be looked at more as a reason as opposed to an excuse. Those were kind of the factors that I looked at and said, I think he's probably going to get another year. And, you know, I was kind of really looking at how Ben was answering questions and seeing if there was any sort of hint of maybe you know, icing in the relationship with Mark Coyle, the AD, and if he could kind of sense that something was coming. And I really didn't get that yesterday during the press conference, watching it on Zoom from Indianapolis. And that's why I tweeted that. And that's kind of the justification for why I thought personally that it wasn't going to happen.
You know, it was kind of interesting because I did chat with him. Oh, you're aware of this, yeah, that I had him on the show last week. And one of the things that I brought up was it seemed like nationally some names out there were kind of rallying around Ben.
Totally.
Which, you know, Seth Davis and somebody else, I can't remember the name right off the top of my head. But
Pete Thamel.
I wonder if they knew something or had heard something and kind of stepped up their public support for him because maybe they had heard that something maybe was coming down.
Yeah, 100%. I thought the exact same thing. When Pete Thamel, you know, tweeted and Seth Davis, two, you know, very well respected and connected reporters, respectively, I thought that, okay, there's probably something else there as well. And then even yesterday morning, Jeff Bozzello from ESPN said that Ben Johnson was likely to return. So there was a fair amount of kind of national steam, if you will, or commentary. Obviously, you know, when Jeff is saying likely, that seems like it's sourced. And, you know, even Pete Thamel's comments and maybe a little less Seth Davis, because he was talking just more about the job at Minnesota. I looked at those things as part of the context as well.
What would you say was probably the hardest thing for maybe been to accomplish outside of the wins and losses in terms of just, you know, putting together and keeping the program on track or just things that he missed the mark on? What do you think was probably the biggest criticism?
The biggest criticism is probably just the roster turnover. And I don't even really put that all on his shoulders just because of the low NIL money and the transient nature of college basketball today. I don't think that a lot of that was on him. You know, I think when you look at Pharrell Payne and Elijah Hawkins taking big paydays to go play college basketball in Texas and Cam Christie going to the NBA draft and being selected in the second round by the Clippers, that was just kind of the rub of it. And he had to kind of make it work on the fly and go back into the portal with not a lot of money to bet on players that were making the jump from the mid-major. And some of them worked sometimes and didn't work at other times or didn't work at all. And that was kind of out of his control.
Yeah, we're talking to Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press, joining us here on the Lake Show on News Talk 830 WCCO. I thought that the Pharrell Payne situation was I thought that that was a big deal. That kid is going to play in the league. He's having some success at Texas A&M. The moment that he went into the portal, I said, yeah, this one's going to be a tough one to overcome, at least in my opinion. I think that kid's extremely talented, and I actually think that Ben was doing a good job of developing him in the time that he was here.
I agree, and I think you look at kind of who the replacement was for him, and he wasn't even part of the rotation at the end of the year. So, yeah, when you lose a center, a force in a conference where you need bigs, that one absolutely hurt.
Yeah, that one was hurting. What do you think is the reasonable, or not the reasonable, what do you think is the actual expectation that Mark Coyle has for where this program should be? What level, how he interprets what Gopher basketball should be? Because I honestly believe that Gopher basketball is a good job. Now, we can sit here and we can talk about the dynamics of NIL money. We can talk about a new facility. We can talk about whether the barn's holding it back. We can talk about all those things. But I think that when you are in a basketball-rich state with good history in terms of the Gopher program, I think that there are a lot of selling points. But how much are they willing to spend on whoever's going to come in here and they want to pitch for the job?
Yeah, I think when it comes to revenue sharing, from what I've heard, it sounds like they're going to spend more than their Big Ten peers. Obviously, football's going to get the majority of it, but the Gophers are saying we want to spend more on men's and women's basketball. So I think there's a commitment there. I think the fact that they're paying a $3 million buyout to Ben Johnson to go away over the next 2 years of his contract, the fact that they're going to likely have to pay a buyout to bring in a replacement and probably pay a higher salary than what Ben Johnson was making. Ben was making about $2 million a year, which ranked outside of the top 60 in the nation. I think there's some financial things there that show that they're willing to spend on it. I think as far as the expectation for what Mark Coyle wants, in his statement yesterday, he talked about championship aspirations. And this program is very, very far from that. They've got six NCAA tournament appearances in the 26 years of the 21st century. This program gets to a tournament on average once every 5 years. And I think Mark Coyle wants them to at least be in the conversation, if not making it, it seems, on an annual basis. And that is quite a jump from where they have been in recent history.
Wait, when he says championship aspirations, is he talking Big Ten championship? Is he talking NCAA championship? Is he talking about NIT championship? What type of championship?
I know, right? The new college basketball crown.
Yeah. Oh, come on now.
I know. I think it's probably on a Big Ten level. Yeah. I don't want to say rolled my eyes, but like really looked at that skeptically when I could say if I came across blurry eyed at whatever time it was in the morning.
Well, Andy, you know what's going to be a thorn in our side until we get the person in that resurrects the program and all that stuff is the Wisconsin Badgers having good years and having a good program, knowing that that state right next to us, literally like when I go to work out at the Woodbury Lifetime, I'm just like, okay, I can just go right across the river. Knowing that the Wisconsin Badgers are as good as they've been for years and knowing that they keep getting some of our kids, that has to be something that is bothersome to everybody in the athletic department at the U.
And I think that's part of the reason why they feel like they can be competitive. You know, when you can look at across the border and say, these guys are, you know, pretty much our carbon copy, our mirror image, and they're able to find a way to be successful every single year and make tournaments and go on runs. I think that's part of the reason that they feel like they can be competitive, and part of the thorn in their side that one of the biggest crowds of the season had so much red at the barn, you know, probably 10 days ago.
All right, final question for you, and I got to ask it, and maybe we just don't know anything quite yet, but yeah. Are there any names that you're hearing that people are kind of voicing about, well, you know what, I'm kind of interested in this guy, or we're kind of interested in that guy? Who are some of the early names that people are just kind of throwing out there?
I think Nico Medved, who's a Roseville guy, University of Minnesota graduate. He's done a really nice job at Colorado State. Has taken him to a couple of tournaments. Did so, like we just talked about, with the Minnesotan David Roddy, who's now in the league. In the NBA, I want to say he's with the Hawks. But I think he's certainly a candidate that came around 4 years ago. I think his name is going to be in the mix again right now. I think there's, Johnny Tower at St. Thomas. That's a name that I think is pretty easy to throw out there. It sounds like he's quite the homebody. Grew up in St. Paul, went to Creighton, has worked at St. Thomas, has done a really nice job in bringing a Division III program to Division I, and would get a huge payday compared to what he's making at St. Thomas. He's certainly another one. The coach at Drake, he's done an amazing job at Northwest Missouri State and his 1 year at Drake, but it sounds like Indiana is after him, and he's really been impressive to Hoosiers. So one of the names that I think is on a lot of hot boards might be going to another Big Ten competitor.
Maybe this is why Nico didn't text me back yesterday. maybe it was something, because I texted him yesterday, and we've been communicating for the last 4 or 5 days, especially over the weekend. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure, because they play Nevada tonight. I'm going to be like, bro, tell me something.
Yeah, right. Oh, man, there might be some smoke there, Lake.
Well, hey, Andy, I appreciate the time, my man. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, it was a good time. Take care, man.
All right, take care. That's Andy Greeter, Rita Stuff for the Pioneer Press, covers the Golden Gopher athletic program as well as Minnesota United soccer. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up next, let's check in with Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter. He joins us next year on The Lake Show.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
And Aaron is probably like, as he joins us now on the John Shuchikoa Banker Hotline, he's probably like, Lake, you have me on the roller coaster to go from a late night Timberwolves victory against the Denver Nuggets in fine fashion to talking about the political landscape, which can be depressing at times. Welcome back to the show, Aaron.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. I'm glad you guys are back up and running. And yeah, I was up late watching the game, a little tired today, but I'll do my best here.
I mean, let's just be clear about this. I'm the clone Henry Lake. I'm not the real Henry Lake. I'm the clone Henry Lake. They cloned me last week, and now you're talking to me here on the show.
Oh, so they got like an AI version of Henry Lake with custom costs, just put in the algorithm and... it doesn't really sound that much different. So I guess the AI is getting pretty good.
Well, the running joke over the weekend that I got from a few college basketball coaches and a few people out there, they were like, well, Elon Musk, he thought that you were a federal worker. He came for you and he wasn't able to get the job done.
Yeah, well, hey, a lot of those federal workers have been fired and then rehired, and it's been a roller coaster for them too, so I guess you can kind of relate now.
Yeah. All right, so I want to start with, because one of the things that we always talk about in this country is respecting and valuing the Constitution, and we also talk about respecting and honoring freedom of speech. It's freedom of speech until it's not freedom of speech. And this arrest and attempted deportation of, I hope that I'm pronouncing it correctly, Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University protester. This is just a very scary situation for all. And I, when I was talking about it yesterday, I thought about you, man. I thought about you from, what was it, almost 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, where you're on Twitter and you've got this account that everybody loves, and you're a journalist, and you're sharing information, and all you're doing is calling it like it is. And, of course, one night, Elon Musk, he doesn't like what you're putting out, and he attempts to silence you, and I want to say maybe like three or four others, and then you were back up and running within, I don't know, maybe it was like 36 hours or 48 hours or whatever. But this whole, like, the concept of looking at freedom of speech and what happened then with you on Twitter, and now it's happening to this arrest and attempted deportation situation. First off, when you look back to what happened with your situation, was that the sign then that you were like, something really bad's coming down the pipe?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I would say the Khalil situation is much more serious given that
Absolutely.
He's facing possible deportation. So I don't want to, you know, kind of equivocate. I want to acknowledge that. But and the other thing, you know, I think this was something that a lot of people kind of missed at the time when my account was suspended, is that actually, you know, Elon Musk, as the owner of Twitter, had every right to do that. You know, it was a really bad look for him, especially when he was kind of professing to be this big free speech guy. But, you know, the First Amendment protects you from the government infringing on your speech. And so that's why with Khalil having, you know, the executive branch coming down on him, I mean, that's why this is much more of a blatant constitutional violation. And, you know, it is a little bit more complicated given that he is a green card holder. You know, it's not quite the same as like, you know, a citizen being arrested and deported, which would obviously be a lot scarier. But I think, you know, the thing that's really concerned me with the Khalil situation is that, you know, there's really been no allegation even of a crime or any sort of specific, you know, wrongdoing that would put his immigration status in jeopardy. When administration officials have tried to defend this, I mean, they basically said there's no place in America for pro-Hamas protesters. And, you know, they've even got as far as to say, you know, pamphlets of the sort he was spreading. You know, you can't be doing that in America when the country was literally founded by pamphleteers, you know, exercising free speech. So, you know, I think it kind of shows where this administration is at. And, you know, we've seen historically that when there are, you know, when discontent arises with the government, college campuses are often, you know, one of the first places where that manifests and you see demonstrations and protests. And I definitely think there is an intention here to put kind of a chilling effect on that and make people think twice, you know, before they take to the streets. And, you know, sadly, this is a tactic that we've seen in a lot of countries that are careening towards authoritarianism, which it feels like, you know, it's kind of the situation we're in right now here.
Yeah, you kind of broke up there a little bit there the last 10 seconds. But let me ask you this. From what you have seen, have any Republicans pushed back on the president with regards to this situation that you've seen?
I have not seen any Republicans comment on this beyond the administration, although I get the sense that they would be broadly supportive of this under the kind of rubric of anybody who supports Hamas and is not an American citizen should be deported. And, you know, I think this is kind of part of, you know, if you're supporting Trump, whether you're, you know, Republican or someone like RFK Jr., who is a former Democrat, you know, now obviously a Republican or a Trump supporter, you know, you really have to make peace with a lot of really unsavory aspects of his policy platform. And this is one of them. I mean, he was very clear during the campaign that, you know, if you were a demonstrator on a college campus demonstrating on behalf of Hamas and not a citizen, that he was going to come after you. And, you know, it's one of those things that kind of frustrates me because I'm not sure if people weren't paying close enough attention to notice that during the campaign or if they didn't take him seriously. But, you know, as is the case with the Russia-Ukraine stuff, I mean, this wasn't something that he was hiding on the campaign trail. This was something he talked about in all of his speeches. And here we are, you know, and obviously it's at this point fueling big demonstrations. There was kind of a takeover of Trump Tower, some demonstrations that took place there in New York today. And it's good that people are getting mobilized, but it's frustrating that we couldn't have gotten to this place, you know, 4 or 5 months ago when the threat was very clear and there was a chance to do something to prevent it.
Yeah, we're talking to Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter here on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. And you have this covered a lot in your newsletter that's going to drop tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, that's actually the feature piece, is looking at kind of the speech implications of the Khalil situation and, you know, what it says about where the administration is going. And again, kind of the chilling effect that they're trying to put on free speech, specifically at college campuses.
OK, Aaron, get me up to speed. Is there anything that I'm missing out on with regards to the latest with Ukraine and Russia? I know that everybody's talking about, OK, we're going to try to negotiate a deal. We're going to try to get something done. And I feel like every time that we make that comment, it is basically people looking to Ukraine to accept a bad deal when everybody should be looking at Russia to, you know what, pull out, make good on everything that they're saying in terms of wanting to end the war. It just feels like a lot of this is just kind of like fake in terms of Russia actually wanting to get this done and finished.
Yeah, I think fake is actually a good word for it. You know, a lot of the coverage today has kind of been centering around, will Russia accept this ceasefire that Ukraine has agreed to? And, you know, at the same time, I'm seeing coverage of cities in Ukraine being bombed, you know, strikes on civilian infrastructure there. So I think, you know, it's pretty clear that Putin has no interest in a ceasefire, which you know, honestly would be to the benefit of Ukraine. You know, it would give them a chance to kind of regroup and, you know, organize a push to try to push Russia back further off their territory. So, you know, it is kind of farcical, this idea that Russia is seriously entertaining anything short of what would be a complete capitulation, you know, an opportunity for them to solidify their gains of territories that they're occupying at this point. So, you know, I still think that if you listen to Trump, he's waiting for kind of the official response from Putin, and Rubio is kind of doing that dance too of, you know, we have to wait and see if Russia will agree to this. We hope that they will. But that doesn't seem like that is going to happen. And so then I think, you know, I really don't know what the next move is. You know, again, this was something that Trump on the campaign trail, he talked about actually ending this war even before he was inaugurated. He thought he'd be able to strike some sort of deal during the transitional period to bring these parties to the table. And I think we're seeing now that that's quite difficult, that, you know, there really isn't a solution at this point that's going to satisfy everyone. And of course, Russia is the aggressor in this situation. And so there's a lot of danger that comes with trying to, you know, appease them and kind of grant concessions for aggressive behavior and committing war crimes and an illegal invasion of your neighbor. But yeah, I mean, you know, as I've been watching the coverage today where people are still kind of waiting for Putin to respond, it's like, well, just look at what's happening in Ukraine. They're still bombing them. So clearly they have no interest in a ceasefire.
At what point, or do you think that there is even a point where Republicans or just politicians in general are going to say, we've had enough of Elon Musk? I mean, I know that President Trump is going to try to keep him around as long as possible, but this seems to be like there are even MAGA Republicans that are looking at Elon Musk with the side eye. And I feel like there are a lot of Americans that are like, no, we just can't really take this. Yeah, we might be on board with specific things that are happening that that we support Donald Trump with, but the way that Elon is going about the business is just kind of it's all so weird and it's all so different from anything that we've ever seen before.
Yeah, I've seen this bubbling up a little bit. I mean, I noticed, you know, last night on Newsmax, it was an interview. I'm forgetting which specific Republican member of Congress was being interviewed, but the interview was centered around, is it time for less Elon Musk and for him to kind of, you know, recede into the background a little bit more? You know, I think the problem that the Trump administration is facing is that, you know, the policies have been all sticks and no carrots at this point. You know, obviously, there's been all of these news cycles around the fired, you know, the fired federal workers, the tanking stock market, the, you know, ambushing of Zelensky in the Oval Office. And, you know, it's just kind of relentless bad news and people don't really have anything good to hold on to. You know, like in Trump's first term, or at least the stock market was solid and the jobs market was solid. You know, there weren't these kind of, you know, a hot war in Europe that doesn't seem to have a solution. And Musk is obviously kind of the heat shield for a lot of this because, you know, Trump, I think, has been pretty disengaged. I mean, he likes to, you know, have his photo ops in the Oval Office, but, you know, obviously he doesn't care much about policy. And Musk has been leading the charge with Doge to, you know, fire all these workers and kind of reorganize and really tear down how the federal government operates. And so, you know, we're still a long ways out from meaningful elections at this point. You know, there's a couple specials coming up, but, you know, the midterms are still over 18 months away at this point. So as the pressure increases politically, I think there'll be more pressure on Republicans to distance themselves from Elon Musk, especially if, you know, the news remains kind of bad for the administration. I mean, it was interesting to me yesterday that federal spending last month in February hit an all-time high. You know, I can't remember what the dollar figure was off the top of my head, but this idea that Musk is driving kind of revolutionary changes and driving down spending is not backed up by the data at all. And a lot of the numbers that Doge has provided on their X account or on their website have been shown to be erroneous and in some cases just downright, you know, they're lying about it. So, yeah, I don't expect that Musk will have unlimited leash here. But, you know, again, I would caution that we're still a long way out from the election. And, you know, Republicans are kind of leaning into, you know, the short-term pain, long-term gain sort of messaging at this point where it seems like, you know, they're kind of in this for the long haul. I don't sense a lot of pressure, you know, for economic policy changes that would kind of turn around some of the bad news that we're seeing financially.
Hey, two final quick things. First off, because you do a fabulous job with your newsletter. You're familiar with the investigative reporter for the New York Times. Is it David Fahrenthold?
Mm-hmm.
I think that what they're doing in terms of talking about Doge and like peeling back the layers of what they're not doing, right? Like in terms of like the cuts and stuff like that, I think is absolutely fascinating. I know you guys do a phenomenal job. I just think that all the reporting that you and David and guys are doing is like really, really well done. And I would advocate that any American dive into your newsletter, dive into the work that he's doing, whatever, because DOGE is just, to me, it's just a word. They're not, we talk about Department of Government Efficiency. There's no efficiency there. It's just a made-up term. It's not a real thing. And they're not getting to the bottom of anything. And I guess the last thing that I would ask you is, because somebody on text line says that they're essentially saying that the that Khalil is trying to incite violence and property damage and stuff with his protests. Is there any evidence that he is trying to incite violence and damage and all of those type of things?
If there is, I haven't seen it. It was really remarkable yesterday. The White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt, cited these pamphlets that that were being spread at Columbia, but then instead of actually showing them to reporters, she said something to the effect of, "They're so incendiary that I couldn't possibly show them to you." So I've seen no evidence to back that up, and my hunch is that if that really was the case, that he was engaging in some sort of like hate speech or incendiary rhetoric, that they would show receipts on that, but they haven't.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I asked you the question, because you're more in tune to this than I am, because I had, when I had heard about this situation earlier in the week, I looked and I didn't see anything that was definitive or any proof of what people are, this allegation. So I just want to make sure that we were on the same page. Hey, as always, Aaron, phenomenal job, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, and go Wolves, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. That's Aaron Rupar, Public Notice Newsletter. Make sure that you subscribe to it. It comes to your inbox. Phenomenal job each and every day. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll wrap up hour one, and we'll do that next. Thanks so much for Aaron Rupar for coming on the show and for answering that question, because I looked into that too, because a texture from the 763 says, so being a leader to incite violence and damage the property, to name only two things, are not crimes anymore. If they're crimes, then prosecute people for crimes. Where is the evidence that this individual is trying to do all the things that you're alleging? And that's why people are like, well, hold on, we need to see like the definitive proof of all of this. Like protesting and things that happen out of a protest, no one's rubber stamping and saying, yes, we want property damage because of George Floyd or because of Breonna Taylor or because of whatever. And then they follow up and say, what if the protests were a group of Nazis and Nazis protest? We know that they do. And they were trying to incite violence. I would hope that they would not be trying to incite violence, just like any other group, Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, whatever, and fly with police and had damaged property with the Nazi protest be okay? Of course not. We're not saying that it's okay for anybody. So I'm really struggling with your point that you're trying to make, because I guess I would ask you, give us what the evidence is that this person has made all of these definitive violations that you speak of. It's one thing to talk and protest and be vigilant and be loud and be disruptors, because that's what protests do, is disrupt.
Yeah.
It's another thing to take it to where you're saying it's going.
Yeah, you don't want – there's a difference between protest and riot.
Yeah, you don't want things getting out of hand.
Yeah, you don't want to protest and violence. Two different things. So I think if it crosses that line, then no matter where they're at politically – those individuals need to be prosecuted for the crimes that they commit. I think we...
I wonder what the texter thinks of January the 6th.
I was wondering that, but I wasn't going to say it. I mean, we know the damage that was caused on January 6th. I mean, we can't... We cannot be...
In terms of like people dying and stuff?
Yeah. We cannot be upset about today, whether it's Trump Tower or someone being arrested for protesting, and not be upset about January 6th. Because January 6th was exponentially worse than what we had seen. And I do have a follow-up here on the text line, Henry, from the texter, to kind of maybe, help it out here. Said, it's easier for you to ask to see the arresting police reports for the arrest of these people. I don't have them, or maybe when we have a place arrest.
No.
Maybe
no,
when we have police arresting people without evidence.
No. That's not nice comeback, but not a nice comeback. What we are asking you, the same way that I asked the question of Aaron Rupar just to cross-check it, is what is the overall – you're talking about deporting somebody. It's easy to sit on a text line and say, well, I don't have the – what does our government have to deport this gentleman? Like, that's not good enough, texter. Respectfully, I appreciate you texting. I love the communication. I love when we have a back and forth. That's not good enough. To take a person and arrest them and whip them away with ICE, and then you say you're going to deport them, and they are a citizen or they have a green card, like, that's just not enough.
Yeah, we need proof.
Well, that's in hindsight. Let's look and see video footage and rest. All of that stuff you should have in front of you.
And I think that's all we ever want with anything. If somebody is guilty of a crime, we don't want to go on.
Now we're going to go backtrack everything, you know, right?
Rumor and innuendo don't get us anywhere with any of this. And that's why if somebody is indeed guilty of inciting any sort of violence, then they should be absolutely held accountable for their actions.
Yes, and I do not waver on that. And I hammer people on the left just as much as I hammer people on the right. When they had the situation downtown – and the person, remember, they took their life, and this was all because near Target or whatever. I was just as much upset about that and talking about that the same way, because people getting after the police, that was unacceptable. Let's talk Twins. Bobby Nightingale Jr. from the Star Tribune joins us next.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.